You're listening to New Churches Podcast, a production of Send Network on newchurches.com. We discuss all things church planting. If you're looking to take your next step toward multiplication, you're in the right place. newchurches.com provides relevant and reliable resources for church planters, church multipliers, and disciple makers. Our growing library features pastors, planters, and church leaders like Ed Stetzer, David Platt, Trillia Newbell, Christine Hoover, Dahati Lewis, Trevin Wax, and many others.
Hey, it's Stetzer, New Churches Podcast. I don't think I've mentioned this recently, so let me mention it again. Take a moment to leave a review if you find this podcast helpful. We know a lot of you do. It's the most listened to church planting podcast in the world. But one of the things that happens is when you leave a review, it actually helps other people. People type in church planting podcast or podcast about new churches, then it goes to here. Your review helps that happen. So and again, it's all free. All the resources at newchurches.com are free as well. Our guest today, again, is Will Basham. Will is the pastor of a church he planted, New Heights Church in Milton, West Virginia. I gave more of his bio last time, so I'll skip through some of those things. But one of the things, if you listen to the last episode he was on, he talked about they have just caught a building. They're actually renovating the building. Even as we speak, there's saws and hammers in the background, which you might hear, probably not. But if you hear, that's what's going on. So Will is a rural church planter planted in Milton, West Virginia, a town of 2,500. Church has grown to about 300. And now we're at the get a building stage. Now, let me say with a preface that you may never get a building. There are churches that grow to thousands of people, never get a building. Churches that go stay 100 people for 20 years, never get a building. We're not saying you got to have a building. However, we are saying that we need to think through some of the realities of getting a building and what that ultimately means. So let's jump in with Will Basham. Will, I mean, at what point did you start thinking about getting a building? Your church is about a decade old. At what point do you say, we got to get a building? I'm guessing it's probably before you got one, but tell us about the journey of getting a building.
Gosh, we started thinking about getting a building, I think the day we decided we wanted to plant a church.
Day one.
Oh, yeah. I think or at least the first time we had to set up in a mobile environment, we were like, man, it'd be nice if we didn't have to do this all over again next week.
So true.
So, yeah, anyone listening that's in that season of life where you're setting up and tearing down every week, I know that you long for that perfect opportunity to buy a building and be where you need to be. But I'll tell you this, even having a building, there's a lot of setup and tear down that still happens. If your church is active in a ministry, there's a lot of that physical labor that's always going to be there, no matter whether you own real estate or not. But for us, it was something we always kept in the front of our minds. We never wanted to take our eye off of the market. We always wanted to be open to what was available and looking for those God opportunities for our church to really put down roots in our town. So really, you know, 11 years that our church has existed, we've kept an eye on it and looked for a building the whole time, really.
Yeah. So what kind of places did you meet in before you got, I guess you're renovating. Are you in the new building or working towards being in the new building?
Yeah, at the time of this recording, we're about a month away from our first service in the new building.
So yeah, so we release it pretty quick. So it'll be out before that's there. So what are you meeting in now? And then take us back historically over 10 years. What are some places you've met in?
Yeah, right now we're meeting in an old Chinese restaurant that we're renting. So we signed a lease and did some renovation stuff. It looks like a giant garage. It's got garage doors on the front. Before that, we met in schools. We were actually multi-site, met in a couple different schools, and you know, very typical church plant set up and tear down in a cafeteria/auditorium, and we did that.
Thank you for defining cafetorium as if our audience wouldn't know what a cafetorium is.
Yeah, but go
right ahead.
so yeah, did a lot of that, and before that, when we were in the very early days of planting, we rented the party room at Giovanni's Pizza in our town. The rent was the requirement to buy food. There was no rent. It was just you have to buy food. So we had to buy at least one pizza. That was our rent. And we got the party room at Giovanni's Pizza. And before that, we literally met outside in a park. When our church very first started, our very first services was in an outdoor park, covered picnic shelter area.
Wow. Okay. So lots of different meeting. I've been fascinated by the rent of a pizza, which I would be willing to pay that rent. I like a good pizza. So,
man, there were arcade games in that party room too, like Miss Pac-Man and stuff like that. And I would go in early and put signs on it that said out of order, which is probably dishonest. That was probably sinful, but I meant it in the terms of like, it's out of order to play games during the sermon. That's what I meant. But, but I wanted people to think they didn't work.
No, that's good. That's wise. That's good. Being wise as a serpent and as gentle as a dove. I like the sound of that. Okay. So, you know, getting a building for those who kind of gone through this process is it's multifaceted. It's, can you afford it? How much of a building should you get? You don't want to buy the shoe while the foot's still growing. There's all kinds of questions. So, you're in two services now. Will this building lead you to be into one service? How did you think through those things? Help me think through some of those things.
Yeah, we're in two services right now. This building will allow us to go to one service for at least some time. We're hoping for at least a year before we have to go back to two services. We would love to stay in one service, but we'll see what the Lord does. But yeah. We bought a historic movie theater in our town. And so it was a one screen movie theater built in the 1940s, and cool. We've bought it and finishing up renovations on it right now.
Nice. And movie theaters are difficult sometimes too, because particularly when they're built before, you run into asbestos issues, things of that sort. So has it been an expensive remodel?
Yeah, there's been a decent amount of expense that's come with it. It's been a nightmare in some ways, but in other ways it's been everything exactly what we wanted. The size of it is perfect. It's not too big. It's not too small. It's like the Goldilocks, you know, it's exactly what we needed.
Good.
The difficult thing when we bought it was we weren't real sure how we were going to do kids space and office space and things like that.
Movie theaters are not generally set up for that. Yeah.
That's right. And we were going to have to build out a second story that didn't exist fully. And so it was going to be difficult. And a neighbor came to us that owned the building next door, which we didn't even know was for sale. There's 5 feet in between the buildings, and they offered us that building. And so it was like, we didn't plan on buying two buildings, but they were Christians. And so we entered into negotiations with them. Long story short, they ended up offering an owner finance 30-year note at 0.0% interest.
That is the right interest rate. I would have negotiated for better.
We quoted scripture to get it, and it worked. And so, yeah, we were like, hey, we're two Christian parties. We shouldn't be paying interest here.
Did you really?
Yeah, it's the Bible. And so it worked. And so when we got the 0% interest, we were like, hey, this could actually take off a lot of the construction cost, even though it's more cost in the long run. It's a good investment. So we built two hallways in between the buildings to connect them. And so then all of a sudden we had an education wing and offices and more space than we even dreamed of. And so from the space we're renting to the space we're moving into, we're going from 5,000 square feet to 15,000 square feet. And so it's just
wow.
It's just been a great opportunity for us.
Okay. So then one of the questions people have is, I got this church plant, and, you know, and sort of when you start a church plant, you have a pretty intense membership process. For those who didn't listen, you want to listen to the earlier episode where Will talks a little bit about that. And you're calling people in the community and the giving, but probably you had to call them to give above where they were giving before. You had to call them to a greater sense of giving to do this or not? And if so, how did you do that? How did you raise money for the building is the short version of the question.
Yeah. So we planned long-term and were very patient in getting a building. So we just basically said we wanted to have money in the bank for a building when it came up. We didn't wait for the building that we found to be available before we started raising money. So we wanted to be able to have like a down payment in the bank. And we did that by God's grace. But we actually did it a different than a lot of churches do. We didn't do a capital campaign at all. Mm-hmm. Instead, we opted to just say we didn't want to overextend ourselves and have some kind of crazy big one-time purchase that we couldn't really afford, that if we wanted to make a move into purchasing a building, it needed to be something that we could make payments on. Now, we did do financing through a local bank, a small bank, that was able to partner with us and flex into our needs, which was fantastic. But we went to our church and we said, hey, we're not going to do a capital campaign. We are going to let you know that there's some extra expenses in this season. And so we certainly didn't turn anyone down that wanted to make extra donations on top of their regular giving. But instead, we opted to say, all of you should be giving regularly. This is something the Bible calls you to. And if you're not, this is the perfect time to begin doing that. And so we did have an emphasis on giving, but we didn't do a full out capital campaign. Rather, mm-hmm. we just called people to consistent and faithful giving. And it's paid off so far.
That's good. I'm a little surprised that, and this is just so everyone knows, this sort of, he shared this before in the show notes. So I knew that you didn't do a traditional capital campaign. I'm wondering, I mean, for me, I love to raise funds. I love to, you know, I'm at Biola University now, and I love to sit down with donors and say, listen, I want to ask you to do this $3 million gift, but I don't want to insult you. If $3 million is too low, you just let me know and we'll talk five or six. You know, yeah. I love to ask people to give. I think it's a blessing to give them the opportunity to be blessed. Did you go to any people and say, hey, could you help us out above and beyond to do this? Any donors like that?
No, we didn't go directly to people, but we did have people do that. Okay. So we kind of put the call out. Okay. Yeah, so we had some people step up and say, hey, the Lord's led me. We know that there's this need, and so that significant one-time gifts. Now, what we did do was we went to other churches, churches that we're in network with and partnership with, and we've historically done a lot with, like our sending church sent us a lot of money. They had funded us from day one, but hadn't written us a check in probably 7 years or something right. like that. But
so you want to give them the opportunity to be blessed.
Oh yeah. This was a time to go back to Mama Church and say, hey, here's a good time for you guys to sow into this ministry once yeah. again. I actually emailed 40 of my closest friends in ministry and said, I'm trying to just get an extra $20,000. Would all of you pray about giving $1,000 gift to this effort? So I'm praying that half of you will be able to do it. So that was the only sort of capital campaign I did. And that was with other pastors just mm-hmm. from their church budgets rather than going to our people. And all of that came out of a place, it was contextual, right? Our people aren't used to giving chunks of money in donation form to nonprofits. They're not typically writing it off on their taxes at the end
yeah.
of the year.
Yeah, it's and, not, again, for those of you who weren't in the last episode, it's an economically depressed area.
Yeah, and so we just didn't want – the last thing we wanted was to – didn't want our members to feel like we were shaking them down mm-hmm. so that we could get something that benefited our staff or the preachers or anything like that. And so instead, we just said, the Bible calls you to this regularly, and we've actually already been calling you to this before the building was even in our crosshairs. And if you're not doing it, now's a perfect time to begin doing it.
Okay, so it became an opportunity for people to step up in different ways, not a direct capital campaign, but an exhortation to give. Because it is unusual, and I would say that most listeners will do some sort of capital campaign. It doesn't have to be, you know, capital campaign sounds like you got a consultant coming in, there's all kinds of slick brochures. That's sometimes the last thing you want to do, but there's just ways to engage people and encourage people to give. So
I talked to some people about consultants in the capital campaign, and the cost of the consultants was like, I was like, man, I could do so many renovation projects with that money, totally. Right?
Yeah.
And not to say they're not worth it, but
you know, sometimes it's like depends upon the city. It could be 10%. Like if you're raising $2 million, $200,000 goes to the consultant. It could be 20%. I mean, it is now I would tell you that a lot of times the reason people do that is it really I've never been a consultant on a church building campaign. And to be clear, I actually never used a consultant on a church building campaign, like a company. But people who have actually found it to be remarkably successful at times if they do it, kind of follow the directions of that. So again, but for most church planters, that's not even your building campaign as a church plant is so small that most those companies wouldn't do anything with you anyway. So it's probably not, but there are resources you can order online, how to do a capital campaign, et cetera, et cetera. And most of them do include asking people in local church settings. So that's where you're different. And that's not, there's nothing wrong with being different. It's great that God's blessed your church in that way. I'd be interested, is that the advice you'd give another church planner? Would you say do it that way? Would it be differences to how you do it? Tell me.
I think you'd have to evaluate what the difference is in cost, because when you look at the two buildings we bought, the two properties together, the total debt that we took on was only 2 years worth of our budget. Okay. So our annual budget is about $300,000. And so the debt we took on was a little over $600,000. Most people, when they're buying a building, are buying a lot higher dollar amount than that.
Yeah. And I think that's part of the rural reality is we're property at an abandoned theater. Property is cheaper. You know, I'm in Southern California, $600,000 is going to buy you a carport. So it's, right, you know, it's a right, different, yeah. it's a different vibe for sure.
I have a friend in DC. I told him that that we bought a 9,000 square foot old movie theater for $165,000, and I thought he was going to punch me in the face. He was just like, "How is that? How is that even possible?" I was like, man, you got to live in a small town. And
I love it, man. I love it.
So, you know, we benefited from that part. But then I said, all our church members are poor also. So you got to keep that in mind as well.
No, you got to. And I think that's key is you've got to have a strategy and a facility that matches your community. So let's talk about a couple of things because I've been fascinated asking a lot of questions. But we keep going long on the Will Basham episodes. But let's press in on a few things here. Building out the building. Now it's a theater, and one of the things in a small church, in a small town, everybody knows that the church bought the theater. I mean, there's nobody in town that probably is not aware that the church bought the theater. What about religious symbolism? What are you doing with cross and church looking like things? How does that work for you?
Yeah, so we've opted to we're actually putting two really nice stained glass pieces on the front of our building, but we're not putting like overtly religious symbolism on them. And our effort was to really try to bring non-religious people into the building. And so we want it to feel more like a venue rather than a sacred space, which can be controversial, right? But we want to serve the community and be open-minded to people coming into that space and really view it as something that allows us to give to our community rather than to take from our community. And just for example, one of the things we're hoping will come into this space is there used to be a bluegrass venue that closed down during COVID. And now we're going to have this theater space that would be a perfect concert venue. And so we're hoping to bring that bluegrass venue back and not do it ourselves, but bring those people back in and just let them use our space to do that. And so many other ways, right? And so we don't want it to feel overly religious to the point that, you know, bluegrass musicians will be like, well, we don't want to come into a church and do that. And so that's been an interesting take because it's been a little bit confusing for, you know, like Jason Aldean said, try that in a small town, you know, build a church and not make it look, not put a steeple on it.
Try that in a small town.
Yeah. People are like losing their minds. Like what? You're not putting a steeple on it. And you know, we painted the sides of it black instead of white. And people are like, I've never seen a church that color before, you know, just losing their minds. And the reality is we just wanted to do it in a way that was very inviting to people who might not be religious.
Yeah. Yeah. But what's interesting. And I have a whole section, I think it was in an earlier version of Planning Missional Churches on rural church planning, which again, I'm not an expert on, but I interviewed a bunch of rural church planners. And for me, like I could create a venue and think about a venue and people are like, oh, that's a church. I'm surprised. But everybody knows it's a church. So it's not like anybody in town is walking by. Everybody knows it's church, probably know you by name. You've already got a reputation with them. And so in a sense, you're sending a message about the kind of church you want to be, not hiding what you are or not. But you're sending a message. So everybody knows. And so you're kind of sending a message to irreligious people that this is a place for you. And tell me about the coffee shop too, because that's, I mean, people have done that, but talk to us a little bit about that.
Yeah. That's been done a lot, but yeah, the town I'm in, you can't get a cappuccino or a latte. It's like all you can get is just black coffee somewhere. And so, we wanted a place where people would actually post up, do some work or, you know, hang out for a little bit. And so a couple of our deacons are actually running a coffee shop in the front of the theater, Monday through Saturday business, freestanding business. They're paying us rent. Part of the rental agreement is that they're going to provide coffee every Sunday for our church, which is a great benefit to us. But the big benefit and what we're really excited about is people coming in as customers and seeing, oh, there's a church that meets here. These people are really kind. That while I'm on my way into my office for a meeting, I'll be walking through a coffee shop with lots of lost people in that lobby, you know. So we're really excited to be able to do that, get non-Christians coming into the space and just making it a hub. Geographically, it's in the center of our town. It's on Main Street. And so, again, we just wanted to be patient and wait for the very perfect place and opportunity so that we could be right in the middle of everything. And God's delivered on that. So we're really thankful.
Yeah. And I love it. I think, you know, again, just the beauty of the similarity. Mark Batterson is a friend of mine, pastors of church in DC, and they have this coffee shop called Ebenezer's where they also, you know, meet. And it's the similarity of these kind of contexts is reminds us that, you know, mission leads to similar forms because people are being engaged in similar ways. Have you thought about, I've already gone too long in this episode, but I want to ask you, you know, there's a bump. There's a bump coming that when you get a new building, I typically tell church planners that they're probably going to see in the next year a bump of 20, 25%. Typical. Now, again, that doesn't mean everybody has that. Don't, you know, bet on it. But have you thought about the bump and how are you going to take advantage of the new facility and communicating that, or talk to me about that?
Yeah. Yeah. We've thought about it a lot. We're trying to prepare our people for it. And we really just want our people to see this is the bump is an opportunity for discipleship. So rather than our church members looking at it as, wow, look, our church got bigger. This is great. That with our church growing comes in, let's say it is 20%. There's 20% that many more people that our people get to disciple and invite into their small groups and invite into their lives. And so we really want to emphasize that this is a great opportunity for us to do ministry. And it's so easy to get distracted on the building, right? As a church planter, especially a church planter that was meeting in schools and outside and at pizza places, I spent so many years saying the church is not a building, the church is the people. Until we get a building, and then all of a sudden, everyone in my church is obsessed with the building.
I know.
So much so that, like this past Sunday, we had maybe more first-time guests come to our church than we've had in over a year, I would think. And there were lots of conversations happening about the building because, you know, we're a month away from moving in. What do we have to finish working on? Here's my opinion on what we should do about that. And it was like, man, where's the excitement? How can I get people excited that we had this many first-time guests and we got to meet them and follow up with them? And so, especially pastors listening, it's a constant effort. You can't let off the gas pedal on mission because you got a building. And, and I think getting a building has taught me that more than anything else, that even more so now I have to keep the mission in front of our people.
So good. So good. And I would say to you that one of the things that's happened, that's going to happen soon, next year, you're going to be in the building, and all those people who were with you in the pizza place and the schools are going to see all these new people who come in and don't appreciate the sacrifice you went through, and this whole pioneers versus settlers. And this is a complicated reality. So we wanted to kind of give everybody kind of some ideas, some look into what it looks like to get a new building. Will, thanks for taking time for us on the New Churches podcast, and everyone, thanks for listening to. I think it's an important conversation. There's other issues. There's other episodes where we talk about buildings as well. You can search through the episodes to find that as well. Important issue. Thanks, Will, for taking the time.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
You've been listening to the New Churches podcast, brought to you by Send Network. If you like what you heard, take a few minutes to rate and review us or share this episode with a friend. It's the best way to show your support. To find more reliable resources to start your new church well, visit newchurches.com.